Thank you for checking out Random Musings from the Clinical Trials Guru. It really means a lot to me that you're listening to this podcast. If you listen and you like the content, then make sure you subscribe, make sure you leave a review. Please do that. And also go check me out on some of my other platforms. I have a long-running YouTube channel. I've got a blog, theclinicaltrialsguru.com. If you're interested in becoming a CRA or you're interested in getting a career in this industry, go to thecraacademy.com. If you're a research site owner interested in getting more studies for your site or negotiating better contracts for your site, go to my blog, theclinicaltrialsguru.com, and check it out. I offer consulting services. If you're a pharma, biotech, life sciences company, a CRO, I own a startup CRO, and we're here to help you, whatever it is you want. If you're a CRO, we can white label a lot of services for you. We have CRA coverage across the country at cost. We can do this at scale. If you're a pharma company, we are a full service CRO, and we're very confident in our pricing, and we are extremely competitive at bidding. And if you're also interested in your own digital marketing and leveraging a podcast maybe for yourself, reach out to me, dan@theclinicaltrialsguru.com. Again, thank you very much and enjoy the show. Hello, Guru Nation. Welcome to episode 167 of Random Musings from the Clinical Trials Guru. They've been coming slower now.
Why is that?
I don't know. I've been busy. Too many business plans.
You're never too busy.
Too many business plans. Too many micro videos.
You can't work 24/7. What's wrong with you?
Too many students. And a lot of the videos I were doing were not podcast friendly because the audio was bad. This one's podcast first. It's also going to go on YouTube. So episode 167. I'm going to miss an entire week of podcasts next week. So I'm doing one every day this week. Tomorrow, happy 4th.
Happy 4th. Pre.
May the 4th be with you. But that's May 4th.
So are you going to be able to upload from Spain?
No, I'm going to do one a day here this week. And just everyone's going to go on a vacation next week.
Well, so you're just going to upload them all at the same time.
Yeah.
Okay.
And you have plenty of catching up to do.
Okay.
Because I doubt anyone listens in, binge listens.
Do you think anybody's listened to all 166 episodes at this point? Anybody?
I would hope not. But I think there probably are, a handful.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Yeah. Drop Dan a comment if you've listened to all 166. I'm curious.
Yeah, but how would we know if they're not lying? Anyone can say that.
Sure.
And you can't quiz them, because it doesn't mean that they were listening.
I'll take their word for it. I'm just curious.
I think a handful. I don't know. Never thought of that. So what is this topic about? This is one that's got you hot and bothered.
I'm not sure.
And you're wearing a coat in 100-degree weather here.
Well, that's part of research. It has to be cold where you store the medication. So
it is cold in here. I started sneezing. I think that's why I started sneezing.
Yes, it's cold in here.
Yeah. Had to get a coffee to warm up.
It's convenient in the summer when it's 100 degrees outside. It's expensive, but it's convenient.
And that's one of the nuances that you need to know if you own a site.
Yeah.
You got to keep it cool in there unless you have a separate thermostat and unit for the IP room.
A separate thermostat controlled room.
Explain.
Well, the drug needs to be stored at a certain temperature, typically on the cooler side.
Uh-huh.
So if you don't want your whole building to be that cool, then you need a room with its own thermostat, essentially.
Mm-hmm.
And being able to control just that room. Otherwise, again, the whole office may be cold. And you'll have to walk around with a coat on with a 100-degree summer.
Yeah, when I got in here, Carlos was wearing a sweater, and it's 100 degrees outside, and he's explained. And then I saw you put one on. Rosario has one on. I'm the only one not wearing a coat.
Yeah, but you're sneezing, so.
I am sneezing. So that's a good segue. There's a lot of nuances to owning a site.
That there is.
Can you memorize and regurgitate all these things?
Well, yes and no. So
explain.
So definitely some items you can definitely, as a research naive individual, you can memorize some of the aspects.
We turned down a potential client today.
Yeah, we'll get into that.
Because they were unrealistic?
And difficult.
And difficult.
So, but we'll get into that.
Okay.
But the other things, I think, are not necessarily memorization. It's just a matter of knowing the material after going over it again and again and again, right? So is that memorization or is that experience?
It's experience. There's memorize. You can, if you really want to get into it, we can. There's things you can memorize, which we talked about.
Yes, definitely. Right?
If you're starting a site, it doesn't take much as far as finances are concerned. It's not, you don't need special permits.
That depends. Too. You don't need license. The finance side of it depends.
Okay, the finance side depends, and we're going to get into that. This will be a good lengthy podcast.
It could be.
We got to leave the listeners with a lot and the viewers with a lot. Yeah, I'm going to be gone for a week.
We can go on for an hour, so this can count as two.
You know, I could probably do like mini videos from my hotel because I got Wi-Fi.
Yeah.
But I don't want to waste my data out there.
Okay.
Last time I went to Romania, I got a $700 phone bill.
Holy crap.
Yeah. I didn't tell you that?
No, you didn't.
I think it was $800, actually.
So, what's your normal phone bill? Like $200 for your and your wife's
phone?
Yeah,
we just... It used to be $300, but we reduced it to like $180 by my wife just calling them and negotiating. But when you go to...
it's roaming or something.
Yeah, but when... So, here's the thing. When you go to... because we go to Mexico every now and then, so that it's free for us to use the phone there and data. It's free. But for Europe, okay, they'll trick you, the phone provider. I'm not going to mention who, but it's a big one, right? And they'll tell you, like they'll send you a text when you get in that country. And every country you go to, though, you'll get another text. So like if you have a lot of stops on your way to your destination, like if you go to Canada,
right,
like Montreal, like
layovers on there.
Here's my last trip. Went to DC to Montreal, stopped, used my phone, data, right? I got a message from the phone company. Hey, international rates apply, $2 a day, and it just goes on your data plan. Unlimited texts and minutes.
Well, that's not too bad.
Right. Then another country, it's like $5 when you get to Switzerland.
Okay.
And Romania is $5. Serbia is $5. So I imagine Spain's going to be the same. But, and I haven't read the fine print. It just doesn't add up. They're doing something with the data. I think they're like capping you at a like 5
lower
gigs.
Rate or something.
No, I think they only want you to use like 500 megabytes a day. But they don't tell you that.
Hmm. And if you go over it, they charge you.
Yeah. But you can call, you can make calls and text, but most people use it for navigation, like to get around.
Sure.
They use it to take pictures, like post on Snapchat, and then while you're doing that, you're consuming other people's stuff too, so just a bunch of data.
Right.
So yeah, I ended up with like $700 or $800 phone bill.
That's ridiculous.
Yep. So gonna try to avoid that this time, but I don't know.
Not a bad idea.
Do videos, the rule is do videos in the hotel with Wi-Fi.
Yeah.
That's it. But I'm probably still gonna have a big bill. So anyways, 3 minutes of that, which benefits nobody whatsoever.
Yeah, unless you're planning on taking a trip.
That's right.
Keep this in mind.
Mm-hmm. So, owning a site, everyone thinks you need permits. Everyone thinks there's thousands of regulations.
They definitely think it's more complicated than it really is.
Yes, it's not that complicated. Explain this.
So it's not that complicated to get started. There isn't a lot of paperwork requirements or any of that type of thing. Where it becomes complicated is actually generating the revenue. That's where it gets complicated, right? Knowing what you're to do, right? If you're completely research naive, it gets complicated when you need to know how to get a study. And then once you have the study, how to execute the study. That's where it gets a little bit more complicated. But even there, it's not necessarily complicated because, well, it is if you're research naive. But if you're not, or if you have a little bit of experience, you have a little bit of an understanding, it's not too complicated because you follow the protocol. That's the Bible for the study. It lays out all the rules and what you're to follow. You follow that, you're doing fine. But we have even current clients that are not research naive, have experience in the industry, and one of the three aspects of generating revenue, getting a study, keeping the study, and getting patients for the study, this person doesn't know, and they have a lot of experience in research, they don't know how to get patients.
Yeah.
right? You know the client I'm referring to. Right.
And they're a CRA.
Yeah.
Experienced CRA, so plenty of knowledge.
Of the industry.
And of the workings of what a site needs, because this person has been on the other side as a monitor doing the site selection business.
Yeah.
Okay. So now if you got somebody brand new that's not a CRA, no research background whatsoever, mm-hmm. let's say they just have an MBA, right? They have a business degree, which, by the way, I have one too. I'll be the first one to tell you, it's not worth that much. Like, go build a business.
So let's put that in perspective a little bit. If so, it took you what, 5 or 6 years to get your MBA, right? Bachelor's degree.
No, I got my bachelor's without the intention of getting an MBA.
I understand, but 4 years for your bachelor's.
4 years for the bachelor's.
A year or two for your
two.
MBA.
Two. A year and a half.
Okay, let's call it 6 years. Just make it easy, right?
Yeah.
So if you could have, instead of doing that, if you knew the future, would have you still gotten those degrees, or would have you directly gone into business?
Well, I was in business while I was doing the MBA.
Okay, but even the four-year part of it, right? The bachelor's degree.
The bachelor's degree, I was a full-time student.
I understand. What I'm saying is, do you even need those to do what you're doing?
To do what I'm doing now, definitely not the MBA. The molecular and cellular biology, you can argue,
that's a benefit.
I lean on every now and then, but it's just so I don't sound stupid when I'm talking to doctors.
So,
or when they're talking,
sure.
Like, I'm not totally lost, I'm just a lot lost.
Yeah, and I can definitely attest to that.
But not completely
lost. When you and I are talking to doctors, I'm way more lost than you are.
Yes, but I'm still lost.
Of course.
I'm just not completely lost.
Like I am. I understand.
Right, I don't want to say that, but I don't know.
I don't have an issue with that.
But yeah.
Point is you do not need these degrees, right?
Right, no.
To be successful in this industry.
No.
Now, if you want to be a CRA, yes, you do. I mean, a bachelor's degree.
Because that's a requirement.
Exactly. Yeah. If you want to own your own research site, you know, so long as you can write a decent sentence, you're probably fine.
As long as you can sign a check.
Well, you still have to be able to communicate with other clinicians, other regulatory bodies, other CRAs.
Well, you can hire people to do that.
Sure. But most people aren't going to have that kind of financing to be able to do that. Right. So long as you don't come off as a moron, right?
Yeah.
You could probably get by in this industry. You can even be highly successful, I would say.
You got to be pleasant when the monitors come. You got to be confident.
Absolutely.
We have some clients that we've been working with them for like 3 years or more. They're very intelligent. Now they have a lot of experience, but they have no confidence. You know exactly what I'm talking about.
Oh, yeah.
And so I have to go there. Luckily, they're in our area. I go there when they have site selection visits because they have no confidence.
Yep.
Right? So in school, can't really teach you that. What teaches you that should be experience.
I would completely agree.
And in their case, it just might take longer. And maybe I've just been babying them too much. So
I think some personalities are designed in such a way that they'll never become confident.
Yeah. But anyways, you don't need a lot. There's not a lot of hoops to jump through to open a clinic.
No, there are in certain aspects of running a site, right? If you want to be a raider, you might need a certain educational level of attainment, right?
Some people don't even know what raider is.
Right, but okay. That's
psychometric raider skills.
Sure, yeah. Sure.
That's for the psychiatry trials.
Well, that's not even necessarily wholeheartedly true, because there's a lot of general medicine studies that require CSSRS.
CSSRS, the Columbia Severity Suicide Scale.
Right? And it's designed so anybody could administer, mm-hmm. but typically the sponsor will require a certain educational level to administer that scale.
It's a safety measure. Yeah.
Right. It's designed so somebody with a high school education can administer it, but they typically want to see somebody with a bachelor's degree minimum administer the scale. So I would say that's typical in about 75-80% of phase 3 or phase 2 studies.
Yeah.
Not all, but most. It doesn't really require a lot of education to be a site owner. Now, as Dan mentioned, it is certainly helpful at times. And a lot of times your credentials will help you if you're, say, trying to get a new PI on board, right?
Yep.
Your credentials might help a little bit there. But that being said, not a lot of requirements to meet. To get a site started, you need a license, business license, right?
You don't even need that. Have they ever asked for a locale?
You
I know it. Here they've asked, but in
the, most cities they don't.
They don't even check.
Right.
Right. Like so, with one of my old clinics, I got away without a business license. I didn't even know I needed one. This is another reason why I went to take that MBA program, because I realized I don't know what I don't know. But then after I finished, I realized, well, I didn't not know that much. Like, a lot of the stuff that I don't know is industry specific, not general business.
Right.
And they're not going to teach me that there. We're going to teach you that in the Site Owner Academy.
Quick funny story.
Site Owner Academy.
What, yeah, free plug. You'll love the
Site Owner Academy. That's my favorite. I built that for me 8 years ago.
I still think the CRA Academy is a better. For research naive.
Well, I love the CRA Academy.
For research naive, and you're gonna, and if you're going to be the coordinator and you're research naive, I think the CRA Academy is a better deal for you.
And what better way to build your confidence and learn what your CRAs are going to be looking for, even if you have no intentions of being a CRA, than to join the CRA Academy and get taught for 3 months by two full-time CRAs, two and a half if you count me, three and a half if you count, no, three if you count you.
We're both a half.
Yes.
Well, you're like three-fifths. I'm a half.
Yeah, you're okay. Whatever. They're both good value, but I think the Site Owner Academy is...
No. I think it is if you have no intent on being the coordinator or being really hands-on. Mm-hmm. Research naive, right?
Mm-hmm.
You have to be research naive. Take on a site, own a site for the CRA Academy to make sense and be very hands-on, right? You're going to be the coordinator. You're going to be the backup coordinator. You're going to have direct responsibilities in gathering data, that kind of thing. I think the CRA Academy is a better program. That's my own personal opinion. I know we disagree, which is fine.
It's okay. I love both. So, you know. But if you created both for a reason.
Obviously, if you have some research industry experience, you don't need the CRA Academy. You need the Site Owner Academy.
And the Site Owner Academy, when I had my reservations, I didn't have much confidence about whether I could run a business. I thought, you know, I'm just this kid out of college who was pre-med, mm-hmm. couldn't make it to med school. Like, and my confidence is always sky high. But I, you know, when I realized I didn't know about a business license and I didn't know about a CLIA waiver, I just thought there was so much I was missing out on. So I felt like I had to go get an MBA and waste $24,000 on a student loan to get this MBA with the University of Phoenix.
So if you could do it all over again, would you have gotten your MBA?
No. If there was a Site Owner Academy around, it's exactly what I would have wanted.
Opposed to the MBA?
Yeah.
Yeah?
Exactly what I wanted.
Sure.
That's why we made it.
Okay, so quick funny story, I think. So when you found out that you needed a business license, how long had it been since you had a business license?
I didn't have one until I found out I needed one.
Okay, so how long had you been in operation?
3-4 years.
And
the business was around before I got involved, so it was even more than that.
So you eventually went and got your business license.
I got the business license, and then they checked their records, and they looked at when it was incorporated, and I had to pay back from that date.
And was it costly?
Yes. Yeah.
And the business license is what, usually 50, 60 bucks?
Yeah.
But you got fined and...
I got to pay like 7 years of it and fines and all kinds of stuff.
So how much was it?
I don't remember. This was like 2007, 2008.
I guess? 1,000 bucks?
600 bucks. No, 600 bucks? Not that much.
Oh, okay. Yeah. That's not too bad then.
No, but it was like, okay, it was like insult to injury. And I was like, all right, I need to like figure out what I don't know.
Sure.
Not just about research. Like I said, if they had the Site Owner Academy back then, I would have been all over it.
Sure.
Even the CRA Academy, I would have been all over it and hacked it. I would have asked business questions in the class.
But you were familiar with research enough on the gathering data side at that point, weren't you? Hadn't you assisted as a coordinator? You told me you worked in Newport Beach as a coordinator a little bit.
I joined... I started my MBA program... At University of Phoenix, which it's not online. I chose the in class, so I had to go one day every week for a year and a half, for like 4 hours.
Right.
That was 2007. So I was full time from 05 till 07 as a site owner and coordinator. So I picked up a lot of the fundamentals.
So the CRA Academy wouldn't have helped you much, I don't think.
I would have still taken that.
Site Owner Academy would have been your go-to.
Oh, yeah. Which is why I think I say that's my favorite.
But again, most of our clients, I would say at least 60% are probably research naive, right?
Right. So they need...
They need to know the finer details.
They probably need that.
Right.
And a lot of people think they can take shortcuts, which is where we fired our client before they were even a client today. Well, there is a common business practice.
Fire the client.
Let's fire your client. That's actually a strategy.
Yeah, that is a...
Fire your most problematic client.
Yeah, who says that?
A lot of people say that. It's a cliche now.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. Don't know if I agree with that or not. First of all, we're in client services. So as a site, we're not really in client services. We work with sponsors, and then we have patients, and we got to keep our doctors happy.
Right.
So that's not client services, and you can't fire.
Well, you could even apply it to that, though. Say you take on a very difficult sponsor.
Never work with them
again. I'll never work with them again.
Yes, but during the study, it'd be stupid to get rid of them.
Right.
You know, because let's say that's your only study, right? And client services, what we're doing with our consulting,
mm-hmm.
you know, we may have 30 to 50 clients at any given time, maybe even more as we grow.
Mm-hmm.
And it makes sense to get rid of the
more problematic
ones. But this one wasn't even a client yet.
Well, and let's specify difficult, right? What makes a client difficult? This is my opinion. If you're research naive and you don't want to listen, right? And matter of fact, you want to become argumentative and yell, you're a difficult client.
Yeah, you got hot and bothered.
Yes, we took a call today.
Did I seem upset?
Yeah, I said, hey, I'm about to hang up on these people. You kind of smiled at me or like nodded.
I was getting upset to you. But I don't think I conveyed that I was upset when I was talking. I was still talking, like trying to make sense.
Sure, and I was too.
Yeah.
But when I'm being yelled over and yelled at, I don't like it.
Mm-hmm.
Especially when I'm trying to be helpful.
So there's one we'll never get back with, probably.
It's probably for the better.
For the better. Opinion. But let's use that as an example, though. So that, first of all, we've never done that before, but we've get a lot of these common themes from research naive people,
mm-hmm.
thinking that just because they know 10 doctors, that they can start 10 clinics,
mm-hmm.
and let's pay you
and be successful.
Yeah, let's pay you $1,000 this month. Us, you know, we charge $1,000 a month to get studies and new contracts.
Let's pay you
and
us
you
as
teach
consultant.
Us everything, and then let's get all 10 doctors, you know, studies, and we'll just pay you $1,000, and we'll see how it goes the next month.
Mm-hmm.
That's not how this works. If you don't know what you're doing, there's only so much we can do. I can't be there at the site selection visit for you.
Unless you're nearby in Southern California. We'll do that.
Then I will. Sure. For the SoCal people, I will.
We've done that before.
Not San Diego, but LA and Orange County and Inland Empire. Although I wouldn't mind going to San Diego. I'd make a vacation out of it.
Sure.
A staycation.
There you go.
A daycation. But yeah, for most research naive clients, they're not in this state or in this area, right? So... And we even do prep phone calls prior to their SSBs.
I usually spend an hour.
You're the one who does it. Sometimes I do it, but you do it most of the time.
Yeah, spend an hour. One or the both of us will spend an hour on the phone with you going over the questions you're going to be asked and how to answer them.
But even that is not enough if you don't know what you're doing.
I would agree.
You would agree.
Yeah. That's why we
This is exactly why we started the Site Owner Academy.
CRA Academy, too.
And the CRA Academy. We have a package.
More so the CRA Academy for that.
Okay, why? What are people listening, they still don't understand. They don't know what they don't know.
Sure.
Somebody might be thinking, hey, yeah, let's pay $1,000 a month. You teach us everything we need to know. And hopefully by 3 months, we'll be good. We'll have studies. And what's wrong with that? Why is that strategy flawed? Why is that destined to fail?
Okay, so
unless you get very lucky, right?
Well, and we've had lucky clients, in my opinion. We've mm-hmm. had clients that are research naive and have been able to get studies without the CRA Academy, the Site Owner Academy, just using our consulting services, and it's worked for them. However, it's also failed for some that are research naive, right? Yeah. Because we can't prepare you for every potential question you're going to encounter.
This guy's objection, who we've hung up on, said, well, I can just memorize all the answers. I'm a smart person. I went to blah, blah, blah school. Yeah,
14 bachelor's degrees.
Yeah. So I can memorize any answers you give me, right? And then you asked, well, what'd you ask?
I asked him basically what a 1572 was.
Yeah, because he asked you to stump him. Like, what's a possible question a CRA may ask at a site selection visit?
Right.
And you said, what site, what address?
What's the site address? Where does the site address go on the 1572? Is what I meant to ask. That's not what came out. It was something different. But I was just basically testing to see if you know what a 1572
was. The point was, yeah, like when you hear the term 1572, you're not like, huh?
Right.
Because if your first SSV, if you don't know what you're doing, let's say you don't even hire us. You just go on clinicaltrials.gov. You find a study you like. You email that client, which we explain in webinars, in videos. You email that sponsor. Say, hey, I have a doctor here and blah, blah, blah. We want to do this study.
Mm-hmm.
90 out of 100 times it'll be ignored. But let's say they get a response. They say, oh, great. Here's a CDA. Mm-hmm. Here's a survey. They do that. Now they get a SSV schedule, the site selection visit.
Mm-hmm.
That site has never, if they're research naive, never seen a regulatory document in their life.
Right.
Probably don't even know what a CLIA waiver is.
Sure.
There's more of what they don't know than what they do know as it pertains to this industry.
Sure.
So they're going to be caught way off guard at that site selection visit. I mean, just with simple questions.
Mm-hmm. Like, what's an IRB?
Or what IRB do you use?
Oh, yeah, central or local.
But sometimes they don't ask you central or local. They say, what IRB do you use?
Right.
Because they want to see if you get nervous.
And the correct answer is whatever central laboratory the sponsor is.
The answer is we've worked with all the central IRBs, or most of them.
Sure.
Same thing with the labs. But if you don't know that...
Yeah, we send our labs to whatever...
Or what if you don't even know what an IRB is?
Which... the phone call today, well, that was the case. When you asked central or local IRB, they said they send their samples to their blood samples to the IRB.
And then central or local lab. Then they got confused.
Yeah.
And, you know, we're not miracle workers. You can't, there's no company that you can pay $1,000 to and you're going to get studies and you're going to just through osmosis absorb everything.
Or not even osmosis, even if we just actually tell you everything. We don't have... Okay, so this is my opinion of the phone call we took earlier.
There's today. No script.
My opinion of the phone call earlier today was, this was the second time I've talked with this person. And the first time, yelling is probably too strong of a word, but they were close to yelling at me for me telling them they may want to consider starting their site right now and spending the money they're looking at doing, right? If you recall. Right?
Mm-hmm.
Because you wanted to do our $8,000 package. Said you may want to consider that.
Mm-hmm.
Just, you know, slow down. He said, no, I want to pay today or something, right?
Right.
I think
he said,
I want to pay today.
Yeah, we want to pay
now. Basically.
Yeah.
And I said, well, why don't you think about it? And he kind of yelled at me for saying that. Mm-hmm. Now, I was trying to be, you know, put some thought into it. You know, make sure you want to spend that money.
Yeah.
I'm not trying to grab everybody's money out there. You need to be sure about what you're doing. Right. So today, in my opinion, I know you said you don't think he was yelling, but I think he was yelling.
I think that's more of the personality. I don't think it was yelling, but I could be wrong, very wrong.
Okay,
let's see. But it was odd.
Okay.
It was odd.
So it was more the fact that we're trying to discuss with him reasonably what he needs to understand about getting involved in this industry and him not even wanting to listen, which was... concerning to me, right? I didn't want to have to deal with this person and try and educate them on everything and then have some sort of backlash all the time over talking with this person, right? So I want to get a point across to your and our listeners that I have no problems helping people that are research naive and trying to educate them. But if you're going to yell at me for me trying to help you.
Expect to get hung up on.
Yeah, I'm about done.
Which is what happened today. Never seen you do it. I wish I was Snapchatting.
And I've helped plenty of research naive clients. Plenty. I've spent hours on the phone with many clients, right? You know, yeah. Any given particular client will spend hours on the phone with them. So if you're pleasant and you want to learn and you're gracious about it, and you don't have to be like, oh, thank you, Chris. That's not what I mean. I mean, not argumentative and yell at me.
You can debate. You can debate and ask why and ask rationale.
Yeah, absolutely.
But if you don't know anything, who are you to
yell at me, right? And argue about it.
So what this person wanted was a coach, someone in his corner to encourage him, to have enthusiasm, to show him the ropes. And that's exactly what the Site Owner Academy does. But he didn't want that. He wanted to bypass that.
Right.
Basically get a Cliff Notes version of that 3-month course, which is... you have access to it for life, but it's designed to be finished in 3 months. But you have access to it for life, and to Chris and I for life, or whoever it is that we delegate when we're old to do that.
Or dead.
Or dead. there will be someone. He wanted to bypass that and just pay us a monthly retainer. Like
to do all of that, plus
get them studies.
And basically... be there on site. I mean, he didn't say that, but what he kind of was implying.
There's not enough time in the world for that. That's why we have this academy. So we slot out, we have all the modules, and then we slot an hour a week, every week, to do these things for you.
Yeah. You have any questions? We're there along with the other students, and the other students are there so they can learn through your questions as well, whoever you might be asking.
You can network with them, exchange studies.
Yep.
But I guess the root cause, because, you know, we're not trying to scare anyone either into getting the Site Owner Academy, but this is a complex industry. And there's no script and there's no blueprint to follow that's going to get you safely through an SSV, much less an entire study, like a 2 or 3 year study.
Absolutely.
You'd be lucky to get through your SSV without problems.
Absolutely. And that's where the problem lies, right? So if you hire us as consultants and we get you to the site selection visit, I would say at least 90% of the time, as long as you know what you're doing, you will get that study. If they come to your site for a site selection visit, that's your study. It's your study to lose.
And what does that mean? Break it down. What does that mean? Know what you're doing. Well, because we need to break this down. Apparently, some people, they don't know what that stuff is.
Okay, right? So, and know what you're doing may be the wrong way to put it. Playing off it, you know what you're doing at least, right? Because we've had a number of clients that have been able to successfully do that.
So what is that? What does that mean?
To me, it's being able to answer the questions in such a way that they're acceptable. Providing answers that are acceptable. The CRA is essentially, and it changes from study to study and sponsor and CRO to CRO, they have basically a checklist of things that you need to meet in order to get the study, right, as a site. And so long as you answer the correct answers, right, it's just like a quiz, right? You need to get a 80 or 90% to get the study, right, or to pass the exam. So long as you answer those things correctly, in terms of what they're looking for, then you'll have the study.
I look at it more like a job interview, but same thing.
Yeah, same concept. Mm-hmm. Same concept. You need to be able to answer things appropriately.
Yeah. And what things do they ask?
All kinds of things. And that's where it varies from study to study, sponsor to sponsor, CRO to CRO, right? It varies. It could be any number of things, right? I mean...
what's the most common? Let's say 80%. No, not 80%. Let's say the 20% of the stuff, of the things... that are asked 80% of the time. Because I'm a believer in the 80-20
principle. Okay, so it's almost guaranteed you're going to be asked about your numbers.
Recruitment.
Right. Numbers you'll be able to provide to the sponsor for the study, right? How many patients are going to be able to screen and how many patients are going to be able to enroll and what your database look like. Almost always. 99.9% of the time you're going to be asked this question.
Then they're going to ask questions about that database.
Sure.
Who gets access to it?
Sure.
How? What's your SOP for that?
I wouldn't say that's a common question. I wouldn't say they ask SOP related questions to recruitment too often. I've only maybe
encountered that a
couple times. That's also less common. In my It happens, but less common.
Okay.
Again, that's more the outlier in which you just don't know about those questions.
So what's those 20%?
Again,
if someone really wants to just cheat.
Recruitment numbers, I would say consenting process, and experience, right? Have you worked with this vendor, that vendor, like EDC, IWRS,
vendors. Sometimes Central. They don't ask you, have you worked with metadata?
Right. They'll say which ones.
Which EDC have you worked with?
And that's, I give, like when we do our prep to research landing sites for site selection visits, I tell them two or three, just say you've worked with these two or three, you'll be good, right? Mm-hmm. Or if they just ask, have you ever, you know, worked with this vendor, just say yes.
But if you don't even know what electronic data capture is,
you got a problem.
So when they say what EDC systems you use, you have no clue what that acronym stands for.
Sure, you have a problem. But that's, again, I provide that information in the prep.
Right. That's for our clients are good.
Sure.
But what about the rest listening?
Well, you better know. You better know when somebody says what IWRS systems have you worked with, what they're referring to when they say IWRS or EDC.
Like, what is the purpose of IWRS?
Right. Well, they're not going to ask you that.
No, but you need to know to answer these things.
Sure, to have a general idea on
and
how
to
answer.
You need to know that it's where you officially screen patients, give them a number,
right.
Officially randomize patients.
Assign patient visits.
Assign their visits and assign the medication.
Yep.
If you don't know that, and you don't even know that that's a process.
Yeah. It's a problem.
That's a problem.
Sure. And again, for our research naive clients, we will help with this. But again, we always recommend to our research naive clients to take the CRA Academy.
And many have sent their employees to take it.
Yeah, last week had an employee here.
Yeah, we did a video with her.
Yeah. So there, you know, as I was going to say, so let's say we do our part. You've hired us for the consulting service and we bring studies to your site. Right, so the process to bringing a study to your site includes that site selection visit. And if you can't answer those questions correctly, you're not going to get that study, right? So it's best if you do your part and know what you need to know, because we're not going to be, you know, you're in Atlanta, we're in Southern California, and we're not going to be there on site the day of your site selection visit for you. We can't do that. So,
and even sometimes if we are on site, like we've documented with one of our research naive investigators, we were here with him.
Well, that was CRA. That was intentional on my part, though.
Right? No, a different one.
Different one.
A different one. I was here that day when the CRA asked him something specific. You started answering, and she said, "No,
oh,
no,
that's right.
I know you.
We did
know.
Still get that study, though.
I know, but she said, "I know you know."
Yes, she did.
I want to hear this from him.
Yeah, from the PI.
So even if you are. Even if we are able to be there physically, which is not going to happen.
Good point.
It's not going to. You need to know this stuff yourself.
Right. So, but thankfully, and I do honestly believe this, most CRAs and even I think sponsors and CROs know oftentimes that it's more, unfortunately, because the FDA would not care for this, it's more important that the coordinator and the staff that functions on site and working on the study know more about the study than the BI, because they know I think they know that 90% of the work is done outside of the PI.
Oh yeah, they know that.
Right, so they know that it's ideally the staff needs to know the study and know how to implement the study and handle the protocol. I think they're okay if the PI is a little bit more research naive, if all the staff is there, has a lot of experience and can walk the PI through it. I think that's helpful.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure, because they do want to see on the feasibility questionnaire that the PI has experience, right? Most often, you're going to have to show experience of some sort for the PI to get that site selection visit. Not always.
Yeah.
Because with this doctor you're referring to, I don't think I put he had experience on any of the feasibility questionnaires.
Yeah, and they didn't care because they just wanted a bunch of sites. And those are the kind of studies you want as a new site owner.
And I think they look at the staff too, because it did ask about staff and their experience.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that helps offset the PI's experience,
or
inexperience in this case, if the staff is well experienced. But getting back again, because it's my third time trying to finish my point here. So if we do our part, if you hire us as a consultant and we bring a study to your site, right? And you don't know how to answer these questions, and you fail your site selection visit, they don't give you the study, you're going to blame us. You're going to blame us. We didn't do what we were supposed to do. No, because we did do what we're supposed to do. All we're trying to do is get a site selection visit for your site.
Yeah.
Because
if from you that get a point, site, and we explained that to this client.
If you get a site selection visit, it's your study. It's your study. Easily 90%. Okay, so I've been doing this for 11 years, right? I believe 10 or 11, 12 wow. years, somewhere in there. And I can only recall 3 times in a site selection visit not getting the study. 3 times. That's it. You know how many site selection visits I've gone through? Hundreds, right? I can only recall 3.
Mm-hmm.
So it's, you get a site selection visit, it's your study to lose, right? So yeah. I don't want to get blamed for doing my job, getting you a site selection visit, and you losing the study and then coming back and blaming me.
Right.
I don't think that's appropriate. I don't think that's fair.
Right. And let's say for these research naive people, even if they somehow make it through their SSV, maybe the monitor doesn't care, or the monitor was just instructed, you're going to add the site no matter what.
Yeah. Which just does go happen. In there and do it. Does happen.
A lot. Happens a lot. So now they get the study. First of all, they get the budget. They're not going to know what to do with it. If you watch our videos, you're going to know to negotiate, right?
Yeah.
And you can figure out. We do it for our clients, or in our Site Owner Academy, we teach you specifically how to do it, and we can do it for you. But let's say you don't go that route. So you try to negotiate, and you'll get better the more budgets you do.
Sure.
Now you get the study. Now you got to screen the patients, which is a whole nother problem. But let's assume you have those patients. Now you've got to pay attention to Alcoa, good clinical practice, informed consent, IRB approvals,
preparing regulatory documents,
preparing reg docs,
probably, well, no, it's
preparing the source, following the protocols, making sure your PI has oversight, keeping the monitors happy, entering data, IWRS, reporting AEs. I mean, there's just so many places where if you don't know what the heck you're doing, you could fail. And if you fail badly with a sponsor or a big CRO, there goes a pretty good chance that your PI is not going to get offered more studies from that sponsor.
I'll even take it a step further. We have a client that's been with us for years now, right?
Yep, I know who.
You may not. We've had a few that have been with us for years.
No, I know who.
So they fairly successful in terms of getting studies. I think we average getting them 5 or 6 minimum studies a year. They've been with us for, I think, 3 years. Yeah. And there's so many things that you need to know what's acceptable and not acceptable in this industry that there's no way for us to be able to tell you everything. Because this particular client, very nice people, probably one of my favorite clients, they did not know you could not share passwords in the industry, right? Like EDC passwords. Yeah. IRB passwords, yeah. All the different passwords. They didn't know you couldn't share them.
You can't. It's right. So, part 22 or part 11.
So the site director had access to, I think, EDC, and the coordinator had access to the EDC system, and the coordinator somehow got locked out. So the site director said, here, use mine. CRA came in, and somehow it came up, and the site director said, well, I just gave him my password information directly to the CRA.
And that opens up audits.
Yeah, that became a big issue with the site. But
they're still dealing with it, right?
Yeah, they're still dealing with it.
They're probably going to have an audit.
They have a sponsor CRO, a sponsor audit at this point.
Probably because of that, right?
I would assume so, yes. So, again, and I felt bad because very likable people, but how am I to know? I have to tell, you know, that you can't mention, I mean, you shouldn't do this, right? You shouldn't share passwords, but if you should, you certainly can't tell the authority you're doing so. I mean,
there's almost infinite ways to screw up.
Yeah.
And only a finite amount of ways to not screw up.
Right. And how do we know, how can we guide everybody? Now, saying all of this, I think we do a good job guiding our clients for the most part, right? There's a learning curve, and we can't keep you from screwing up in every conceivable way.
And even if you take the Site Owner Academy or you hire us as consultants,
you're still going to go through a learning curve. It's just we expedite that process a little.
Sure. We make
so it. So rather than screwing up everywhere and then you learning through trial and error, you'll screw up in a few places.
Yeah.
And hopefully not the big ones, rather than all of them.
Right.
Which is where I, when I started, I screwed up in almost every aspect.
Mm-hmm.
Almost.
As it would be expected if you didn't have any clue what you're doing.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And you had nobody to tell you or teach you.
And I had a small clue because I worked as a part-time coordinator
prior
to that.
Right. There's just so many conceivable ways to make errors and mm-hmm. say the wrong thing mm-hmm. and do the wrong thing. And
so back to how we started. There's not a lot of hurdles to jump through to open a site.
No, it's relatively easy. They're inexpensive. I mean,
but it's also relatively easy to screw up.
You know,
when you get a study.
Somebody who has a minimum wage part time job, it's going to be expensive to open a site. But relatively speaking, to start a business in research, you can't beat the cost compared to almost any other business, right? You're going to open a restaurant compared to a research site. The
cost, and the regulations too.
The cost of a restaurant are probably 10 times easily, 10, if not more, 10 times that of a research
site. And same with the regulations.
Yeah, 10 times as much.
In this industry, a lot of the regulations fall on the sponsor. The regulations that fall on the site really fall on the PI. And there's really not that many that the PI has to adhere to. It's just good clinical practice, local and state laws pertaining to research, mm-hmm. which you got to find yourself, right? Like if a monitor didn't tell me about the California Bill of Rights for research subjects, I would have never known.
Sure.
But they tell you those things.
I got a question about that.
Yeah.
So I've actually, you know how I go through this every week with the students. I have the binders right there. Well, not every week, but whenever they're here.
Lately, it's been every week.
Yeah, almost. So with the California Bill of Rights, how would you look up to see if other states have similar regulations? Because I tell them all the time, I'm
like in
sure.
Maryland, just Google Maryland Experimental Bill of Rights.
Because I tell all the students, I'm not sure where you'd find out this information if the state that you're assigned to, you know, a clinic you're assigned to in that just state, Google. If they would have such a thing. But hopefully your superior would tell you such.
Georgia Clinical Research.
You think that would tell you?
Bill of Rights.
But maybe it's not a Bill of Rights. Maybe it's something else that's added on.
Right. And you don't know those things. Now, for those kind of things, your monitors and the IRB will make sure that you have that.
Yeah, I would think like your CRO superior, right? Like your lead CRA or something would tell you, right?
And the IRB would, because in California, there's sometimes they...
They don't always give it, though, the IRB. Hmm. They don't always provide it with a copy of the ICF.
They used to.
They don't anymore, I'm telling you.
Hmm.
You have to have your own copy, which is... So how do you know?
How do you know? You rely on the monitor at the SIV to make sure that they're doing their
job.
No, not
you as a site, but I'm speaking more from the CRA side of things, right?
As
a CRA, how would you know? You'd have to speak to your lead, right? Or your project manager.
Say, hey, I'm going to this site. I've never been to Wyoming.
Right.
Are there any special state laws
in regards to research?
That's
what I tell them. Because I don't know if there's a specific site you can go look at. I don't know if you know.
Mm-mm.
No, okay.
No, it's not that simple like this.
Here's a perfect example. We don't even know everything.
Right. We don't.
It's my point. I mean, how is somebody that's research naive, who's unwilling to listen or take any educational course, going to succeed?
Right.
Right? You're not going to listen. You're not going to take an educational course. Can you succeed?
Probably.
You think so? You still can succeed?
Odds are against you. Odds are against you even if you know what you're doing.
Sure.
It's business. It's
80%. 80% fail in the first 2 years.
Not all of those are research naive that fail.
I would agree.
So the odds are already against you even if you know what you're doing.
True.
Now you don't know what you're doing?
Yeah. So make it more like 95%. And you're unwilling to learn and you're unwilling to listen.
That's the key.
Yeah. And right. The more we're talking about this, the more I'm glad we're not working on this client.
There's no shortcuts, basically. You can expedite the process, but there's no... The work needs to get done. You got to learn the stuff yourself. You can't outsource knowledge to someone else.
Unfortunately, you can't learn like in the Matrix.
You can't learn like in the Matrix.
You can't, unfortunately.
You can't plug into your brain to a USB. But you can't outsource knowledge.
What if you could learn, like, in the Matrix, right? You could plug in and learn everything.
Well, then anyone...
CFR, FDA regulations, everything a CRE's ever known, I mean, all of it, right? Could you, how would you do a site selection visit? Fine, right?
I think you'd do well.
Okay.
Unless they ask you, like, out of context stuff.
Things that you didn't learn in when you were plugged in.
Yeah. Context matters. Like, a CRA can sniff out someone that's experienced versus not. And someone that's regurgitating information versus someone that really has done it before.
See, I would agree with that to an extent. So I think a CRA who cares, right, who makes it their mission, but I don't think most CREs do.
But I think, okay.
I think they follow their checklist, and so long as you meet those requirements, sure. They don't really care.
Yeah, I tend to agree. Which is why it's yours to lose a site selection visit. Yes.
Yeah. That's how a lot of our research naive clients who didn't take any educational courses that we offer were able to get studies. And after you do the first study and you enroll some patients, you'll do fine from there on out. Because once you've experienced it.
Yeah, but like our other client, you know, 3 years in and they're sharing passwords.
Yeah, but they've never. Yeah, you're still going to encounter things you probably. I could probably still say the wrong thing to a CRA. Right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I just happen to know you can't share passwords, right? But otherwise, they wouldn't go through the... And I would, you know, and no offense here to the client, should they listen to this podcast, but I would think going through the requirements to get your password information, you would know you can't share this.
Right.
Right? Because you have to change it every...
And it tells you in the email when you get it, do not forward this or share with anyone else.
It says that, and then you have to change it every, what, 2 months or...
3 months.
3 months.
Yeah.
Right? You would know that they don't want you, you would think.
And that's just one example. I mean, there's tons.
Right. So, yeah, I mean, you can be successful and be research naive, and Dan and I are here more than happy to help guide you. Just please don't be jerks.
Well, not only that, I mean, I would love everyone to be our client or a student, but there's you can't possibly think that you can take shortcuts and have a successful business or a successful career just because you're paying somebody a monthly fee.
Well, I mean, technically that kind of is a shortcut, right?
So getting the shortcut as far as getting the studies and negotiating the budgets.
It's also a little shortcut if you're research naive, right? Because again, we've had research naive classes or clients who have not taken courses or classes
right.
and have relied on us wholeheartedly.
But they had
but they were willing to listen and learn.
So right? That's not a shortcut.
Sure. Okay. Granted. It still kind of is.
What they learned.
Sure.
Right?
Yeah.
I don't know.
I mean, we always recommend to research naive clients to take the CRA Academy if they intend on being the coordinators and being hands-on. It's always recommended by us. So you know the ins and outs. You know what regulatory documents are. You know what a protocol is. You know what everything is, right? We cover everything. I mean, for the most part, right? Don't we?
Mm-hmm.
ICF process, regulatory documentation, what's expected there. We cover source documentation. Yeah. We cover EDC.
So everything. I'll wrap it up. It's simple to open a site. It's not easy,
yeah,
but it's simple.
I would agree. And it's not too costly.
It's 6:44 p.m. You can open a clinic by 7 p.m. today if you wanted to.
You could open one in a minute.
You can open one.
I mean, that's not slang a minute, a true minute.
Right.
I mean, you could.
And you can start biz devving the next minute. Just go on clinicaltrials.gov and email people.
You don't even need a company at this point. I mean, you can establish that tomorrow. Or
you need a PI.
Or
what you do need is a PI.
Yes, you can't get started without a PI.
Yes.
And it's helpful if you have a office location. But that's not even
And that's required. Another thing we didn't even discuss. Let's say you're research naive, and I mean, it's one thing to keep the sponsors and CROs happy, but you also have contacts with doctors, and you convince one or two to do a study with you,
mm-hmm.
Okay? And then you don't know what you're doing, and the sponsor is going to get upset with them, not with you, because mm-hmm. they're the PI.
Yep.
And this PI now is not going to want to work with you anymore.
Correct.
And he or she's going to have a bad taste in their mouth from doing research and never do research again. So you're just contributing to the problem in this industry, mm-hmm. which is 90% of PIs who do their first study never do a second. Yep. You're adding zero value. Matter of fact, you're taking away value from the ecosystem. Because that's a PI that if I worked
was,
with...
Was interested that if they had the proper guidance, could be successful.
If that PI worked with us...
Yeah, proper guidance and could be successful.
They could be successful. They have a better chance of being successful as if they work with someone who's unwilling to learn and doesn't know what they're doing.
Sure. But quick segue. That being said, we did have a site selection visit with a research naive PI.
Yeah, it was here.
Yeah. Who we didn't want to study, and for God only knows what reason, they wanted to do a site selection visit, and we didn't want to study, knew this going in, so did not prep the PI.
Mm-hmm.
To
see on purpose.
Yes, on purpose to see how you would do, right?
So now he knows what he doesn't know.
Yep.
Because what did they ask him? What's they said randomization,
yeah.
And he said, what's randomized mean?
Yeah, and also screen fail. What's a screen fail?
What's a screen fail?
Yeah.
You see? We know, like, we're in this industry so long that we don't really know what you research and AI people don't know.
True and not true. Like, for example...
Like, I would have never thought, well, screen fail and randomization, that's obvious.
Yes.
But to someone that's never done research, they really may not... And this was not a moron. This is a doctor.
No, nice guy and smart.
I think we can end with that.
Okay. I suppose we could. I was heading for an hour, but...
Well, you can go over an hour. We can go longer.
Okay, so with the research naive doctor. So I wouldn't recommend this necessarily to a research naive site because it could upset your doctor. But I had the impression that this particular doctor didn't really need a lot of coaching. Nice guy, but kind of in a different way, not... arrogant necessarily, which I don't know if the individuals we spoke with today were arrogant. I kind of feel they were. I don't know. What do you think?
I don't know. I don't think so.
I don't think so either. Different. Yeah, I don't think so either. But it's the best way to...
Unrealistic.
Said, yes, very much.
Yes.
The best way to learn that you don't know really anything is to expose you to the situation and see how you do.
Yeah, so you told them go apply for studies and see what happens.
Yeah, well, these people, I said, well, go work on your own, have a nice day, and hung up the phone. But with the doctor, I just let him go ahead and see how he did. And I think he learned very rapidly that there was quite a bit of information he didn't know. And guess what? I think I told you this, but the next time I saw him, we sat down for like an hour, and he just kept talking about research and different aspects, and I was telling him all kinds of things. And he was like, okay, I want to do the trainings, right? Like GCP and whatnot.
Now he got a taste of what he doesn't know.
Yeah, he knows he doesn't know.
Right? And they also know that they what our purpose is. Because a lot of doctors think they can do the research on their own.
Yeah, they do.
They don't understand like what a research clinic is and why a coordinator is
right. Why so are these important. People necessary?
Why can't I just do it and have a receptionist enter the data?
Right. Why can't I pay somebody minimum wage and just allow them to take care of everything I don't do?
On the surface, it seems simple. Like, you get a patient, and you enter the data in this computer.
Right.
And that's it.
Gather data and enter it.
Done. And then someone from the sponsor comes and checks, and if there's mistakes, they work with the person?
Yeah, somebody who's supposedly better trained and better educated that comes in and reviews the material and says, okay, here's your errors, please correct, and we're good.
And you don't have to pay for that. Seems pretty simple. Yeah.
Seems simple.
So what's the problem?
The problem is there's a lot more involved than that. It
and
really
is. The problem
is
those people are not really there to...
Oh,
educating.
They are. Well, CRAs, some of them are. Some are. They are there to make sure your data looks good and clean.
Right.
Right? They are there for that. So in that, at that perspective, I think a doctor would be correct, right?
But they can't prevent every protocol deviation from
happening. No, that's the problem, right? It's, one, what are all the little intricacies that I need to be concerned about that I'm unaware of, right, as a PI, right? Because there are a lot of them, right? And who's going to, if I'm research naive, who's going to teach me, right? These things I don't know. And again, getting back to your 90%, this is why 90% of doctors who take on a study don't ever take on another. Because they think it's simple, but it's not. There's a lot of intricacies. And not to scare off potential clients, because definitely we're here to help. And if you take our CRA Academy because you want to be a coordinator, or you want to be very much involved in the research and daily activities, then definitely we recommend the CRA Academy, but it's not 100%, and it's not a requirement. And I know I've said this a few times, just because I don't want people to think that we don't want to work with people who are research naive, right? Again, most of our clients are.
Yeah, we love research. Our thesis of the CRO is built around getting research-naive doctors to...
Involved.
Get more involved in research. But why we try to make them want to do more studies, not retire from research.
Because they had a horrible experience.
Yes.
Right? And so we're there to try and help and make sure this doesn't occur, but we can't be there and solve every or prevent every potential problem, like the password thing. Right? So, I mean, definitely here to help. Definitely will help. But like as you said, what was you going to say before I hung up the phone?
I have no. Oh, we're not miracle workers.
There you go.
Yeah.
We're not. We're not. Unfortunately, we're not. And nobody is. You're not going to find anybody in this industry unless you employ them directly. They come to your site every day. That you can do. You can hire a very well-educated and an experienced research coordinator. I think more important than a research experienced PI, research experienced coordinator is more important.
Oh, by far.
Because
you can make that PI experience in a year.
Right, or less.
Yeah.
I mean, the coordinator can be there to answer any question the PI has.
But to make a coordinator experience requires sweat on your part.
Yeah.
And that's assuming you know what you're doing.
And
if you don't know what you're doing and you hire a coordinator that doesn't know what you're doing, you guys are screwed. You're better off just not knowing what you're doing yourself.
Yeah, and doing the coordinating yourself.
And learning by trial and error rather than
hiring us.
Right? Rather than having someone you're paying to learn by trial and error, and then you don't even learn anything. They learn everything, but then they get pissed off and leave.
Yeah, now what are you going to do?
Yeah, now you got to start again.
Yeah, now you got to bring on somebody else new.
And you still don't know anything.
Yeah, it's best if you're going to be the site owner and this is your one and sole business that you know the intricacies of research as the site owner.
What a marathon of a podcast. A lot to unpack. We can go another 2 hours. You ready?
No.
2 more hours.
No, I have other work to do.
I gotta go.
You gotta go. I got work to do.
Thank you, everyone, for listening and watching, and we'll catch you all later. And don't hang up on any more people, Chris.
It's the first time I've ever done that. Well, not to a potential client, first I've ever done that. I've hung up on other people I know.
I hang up on telemarketers.
Yes, you do that all the time. In fact, it's kind of funny.
I hung up. I don't even think, you know, remember I said the last time I hung up on someone? I think I did hang up on a former student of ours. Like, this was like 2 years ago. They were being a little bit unreasonable, and I lost my cool. And I've also yelled at another person or two.
Wait, you've only yelled at two people in your life?
No, students.
Oh,
students.
Okay.
Students. I don't think I've ever yelled at a client, although I did get irritated with one.
I've never yelled at a student or a client.
I've yelled, but not like, I hate you. It's more like, how do you still not know this?
Sure.
Type of yelling.
You get more irritated when people, how to put this nicely? I can't think of how to put it nicely.
Yeah.
But you get irritated when people continually display their lack of knowledge on a source they should know.
On stuff they should know.
Yeah, you get irritated with that. I don't. That doesn't bother me. If they're being patient and want to learn, I don't have a problem telling them 15 times. I really don't. Where I get irritated is when people get in my face.
Yeah. Or they get like pushy about it.
Right. Or like they don't want to listen. Right. That's I don't know anything, but I don't want to listen either.
I don't want to listen. That's not a good recipe.
Right.
Anyways, good. Good way to wrap up the week. Have a happy,
happy
holidays,
fourth.
Everyone.
Happy 4th.
Star Spangled Banner. And talk to you all later on episode 168 tomorrow.
All right. Enjoy.
I don't know what I'll talk about, but it won't be an hour. Take care, everybody.
Bye-bye.
So hey everybody, thank you very much for listening to another episode of Random Musings from the Clinical Trials Guru. Again, if you haven't already, make sure you subscribe to this podcast. Make sure you leave a review, if you could be so kind, please. And also go to theclinicaltrialsguru.com if you're interested in learning more about who I am, who some of my guests are. You can have access to some of my YouTube videos. I do a lot of videos about clinical research. So go to theclinicaltrialsguru.com. And you can also call or text me anytime, 949-415-6256. Also, follow me on any social media platform. It's Dan Svera. And you can also email me if you'd like, dan@theclinicaltrialsguru.com. Thank you very much.